Hello, this is Simon Hoggart with the very best of the News Quiz from the first half of 1996. It's been a year of great change at the News Quiz, but in spite of that, some things remain the same. There have been all the usual outrageous events, scandalous goings-on, and bizarre new figures emerging in the public eye. And that's just on the panel. The news has got even worse. So, for the past few weeks, a team of top BBC researchers has trawled through the papers of the last year and identified those historic, pivotal moments of our national life. Then we binned the lot, so we could get on and enjoy the stupid trivia, which is what the show is really about. Mind you, we do deal with some big stories. Here's Andy Hamilton on one topic which, after years lurking in the background, turned out to be the biggest event of the year.
I presume this is a question about the big story of the week, the big dilemma about what to do about these poor, doomed bovine creatures with spongy brains, whether we cull them, incinerate them, or just vote them out at the next election.
You heard it here first, Major.
And this story, I think it is worth tracing this story historically, because it began literally and metaphorically with snouts in troughs in the late 80s, when the farming community or somebody decided that in fact the good Lord had made a mistake in making cows herbivores, that their natural diet was obviously diseased sheep, which Mother Nature would have gone for if she'd realised it was a cheaper option. And presumably, in justification for this, they would argue that if you liberated a herd of Frisians onto the plains of the Serengeti, after a while, you'd soon find them lurking in the long grass alongside the leopards and the cheetahs, waiting for a diseased wildebeest to trot by. So they can jump out on him and down him with a hoof and ruminate him to death. But
Francis, your turn for a question. First, of course, who laboured his holier-than-thou attitude?
It's that man, isn't it? Every story in the newspapers is about Tony Blair. Have you noticed this? Major, you never hear a word from him these days. He's disappeared from him. Blair is going off to America, Blair this, Blair that. This was his Easter sermon. He's now replaced the Pope as well as replaced John Major. On Easter Sunday, he addressed the nation and said that God voted for Labour, or rather New Labour. He didn't like the old Labour stuff, the fire and brimstone bit. But New Labour, New Britain, New Heaven, New Earth. And this has offended some people who say they can find no evidence that God believed in a stakeholder society, whatever that may be. Tony Blair has a direct line to God, and poor old Major, yet again, is out of bank. And the Pope has been told to lose 2 stone. Have you seen that?
Tony Blair or God?
His dietary advisers have told him to lose 2 stone in weight, or else he can't compete with Blair.
Hello, this is Simon Hoggart with the very best of the News Quiz from the first half of 1996. It's been a year of great change at the News Quiz, but in spite of that, some things remain the same. There have been all the usual outrageous events, scandalous goings-on, and bizarre new figures emerging in the public eye. And that's just on the panel. The news has got even worse. So, for the past few weeks, a team of top BBC researchers has trawled through the papers of the last year and identified those historic, pivotal moments of our national life. Then we'd binned the lot, so we could get on and enjoy the stupid trivia, which is what the show is really about. Mind you, we do deal with some big stories. Here's Andy Hamilton on one topic which, after years lurking in the background, turned out to be the biggest event of the year.
I presume this is a question. The big dilemma about what to do about these poor, doomed bovine creatures with spongy brains, whether we cull them, incinerate them, or just vote them out at the next election.
You heard it here first, Major.
And this story, I think it is worth tracing this story historically, because it began literally and metaphorically with snouts in troughs in the late 80s, when the farming community or somebody decided that in fact the good Lord had made a mistake in making cows herbivores, that their natural diet was obviously diseased sheep, which Mother Nature would have gone for if she'd realised it was a cheaper option. And presumably, in justification for this, they would argue that if you liberated a herd of Frisians onto the plains of the Serengeti, after a while, you'd soon find them lurking in the long grass alongside the leopards and the cheetahs, you know, waiting for a diseased wildebeest to truck by. So they can jump out on him and down him with a hoof and ruminate him to death. But
Francis, your turn for a question. First, of course, who laboured his holier-than-thou attitude?
It's that man, isn't it? Every story in the newspapers is about Tony Blair. Have you noticed this? Major, you never hear a word from him these days. Disappeared from the scene. Blair is going off to America. Blair this, Blair that. This was his Easter sermon. He's now replaced the Pope as well as replaced John Major. On Easter Sunday, he addressed the nation and said that God voted for Labour, or rather New Labour. He didn't like the old Labour stuff, the fire and brimstone bit. But so New Labour, New Britain, New Heaven, New Earth. And this has offended some people who say they can find no evidence that God believed in a stakeholder society, whatever that may be. Tony Blair has a direct line to God, and poor old Major, yet again, is outflanked. And the Pope has been told to lose 2 stone. Have you seen that?
Tony Blair or God?
His dietary advisors have told him to lose 2 stone in weight, or else he can't compete with Blair.
All right. This is Tony Blair's traditional Easter message to the Sunday Telegraph, in which he reaffirmed his faith in the cross and next time could we please put it next to the Labour candidate's name. Angry Tories responded that they were the true party of Christ, as in 17 years they succeeded in bringing the entire country to its knees.
Mark, how will old age insurance give homely assurance?
This, I presume, must be the pensions. Pensions are actually going to be cut, but they're putting it forward as a way of, well, in future, pensions will be spread out to cover old age pensioners' care in the homes and such things, the way that they put everything forward as a help, when in fact they're cutting, like the Job Seekers Allowance. We're helping you to find a job, when in fact they're cutting the dole. And I'm sure there'll be another one soon. They'll say many old people in our society, because we're in a caring society, are able to draw a state pension. Now, I'm clearly here not talking about those people who have deliberately made themselves old in order to qualify for benefit. But so that these people no longer feel they are a burden on the state, we are going to replace the old age pension with a death seeker's allowance.
Here's a story seen in the Coventry Evening Telegraph and sent in by Jay Carner of Coventry.
Goalkeeper Shane Kehoe capped a great display between the posts with the worst blunder of his career. Shane, who plays for Tarman in the Wexford League in Ireland, had just pulled off a memorable save when his cap blew off into the back of the net. Shane went to pick it up, realizing too late that he still had the ball in his hands.
The question is, what reports were arguably lost at sea?
I wasn't sure if this was true or not, given that it was on April Fool's Day, and I still don't know if it's true that the shipping forecast, that venerable Radio 4 institution, said they're going to axe certain coastal stations. Bridlington, I think, was one. Dover are going to be axed. And certain inland waters like Walton on the Naze and the pond on Tooting Common. and now this is appalling to me, because the shipping forecast, I mean, we all sit there and it makes us feel that all is right with the world. It's like Alistair Cook's letter from America. You've no idea what he's on about, but you just think... It just sounds wonderful. And Charlotte, can you say Dogger Fischer German Bite for us?
I can. Dogger Fischer German Bite.
No! I love it when you talk dirty.
The long-suffering Charlotte Green dragged once again into the News Quiz mire. Interestingly, a survey of News Quiz audiences showed that 78% only come to the recording to see what Charlotte actually looks like. Politicians, by contrast, prefer serious programmes such as Today and The World at One. MPs and ministers rush over to present their version of events and take the opportunity viciously to slag off the opposition, or BBC presenters, as we usually call them. This year, several Radio 4 programmes are in the news almost as much as the politicians who appeared on them. These clips start with the panel giving us a surprising lowdown on one of BBC Radio's most famous programmes. Steve, listen to this piece of music.
It's Good News Week. Someone's found a way to give the rotting dead a will to live for one and never die. Have you heard the news?
Why would the balloon go up with nothing on air today?
Aha. This is a very odd story. It transpires, according to yet another book, that the official policy of the British Chiefs of Staff, the Ministry of Defence, to British submarine commanders at sea, is that if Britain is involved in nuclear holocaust and London is razed to the ground and turned into a pile of radioactive ash, the way that you will know this, if you are serving on a submarine, is by tuning into Radio 4. And if the Today programme isn't on, you may assume that the balloon has gone up. Which is an extraordinarily worrying policy. Because, firstly, I thought the whole point of having an independent nuclear deterrent was an immediate response, mutually assured destruction. If anyone dares to fire missiles at us, we fire immediately back. But it now transpires that we have to wait till the next morning.
To see the end of farming today.
To see, yeah. Right, now it's been 10 minutes and it's still just static crackling. Right, go. And also, these people seem to have totally reckoned without the possibility that any British submarine commander might be a Radio 2 listener. They might be flicking around on the dial thinking, where's Terry Wogan, and not know what's gone on. Or Radio 1. I mean, Chris Evans does a lot of road shows. He might be in Cornwall. It might be fine. You know, is it, what's the weather look like? Well, it's cloudy, but very bright. It seems fine.
You might hear Chris Evans and think, what the hell, and press the button anyway.
Here's something spotted in the Hull Daily Mail. Pictured above is the hole-in-the-heart boy, Arnoud Wabo, in the arms of the Princess of Wales at Harefield Hospital. He's now recovering in intensive care.
Fred, who wanted an equal right to a free ride?
I don't think I know this one, but didn't Fergie, who we're not allowed to talk about, get a free ticket to the States this week? Again?
No. Anyone else?
I think...
We're here.
I think...
Come on, he doesn't need
I think there might be some conferring going on here.
Imperial College.
Right. I'm no further forward, Alan.
Well, who the other team like to go?
One point in which we're very behind New Zealand. It's a lesbian partner of a transport worker who took her employers to court saying that she was entitled to... Andy, why are you shaking your head? Is it not this?
I don't think it is. I think it's actually a bloke.
Yeah,
who insists that now he's retired, why should he have to wait to 65 in order to get his bus pass? And he's entitled to one since he's retired.
Exactly.
But he might be a New Zealander lesbian, Alan. I don't know. No, didn't say in the story.
The lesbian answer will do just as well. I say just as well. I mean, the lesbian answer will be slightly different, but it certainly
would be because it's a bloke.
It's about a lesbian trapped inside a man's body. The story you were asking about, though I agree that the New Zealand lesbian transsexual would almost fit it, was about pensioner Stanley Atkins of Telford, who successfully took his fight for a free bus pass to the European Court. He was as surprised as anyone. He'd asked the conductor to put him off at the post office.
Clive, here's a piece of music for you.
There are more questions than answers, and the more I find out, the less I know.
And as Johnny Nash fades into the distance, your question is, why does neighbourly talk bring a questioning tone?
Oh, well, I know this, as I rather gave the game away earlier on.
You did,
it's a frightening thing that apparently everybody's turning into Australians because of Neighbours and Home and Away and all the other Australians. So I'm suffering this myself. I'm turning into Clive James. And I do the same sort of programmes, I look like him, and apparently our inflections all go up at the end, because young people, anyway, they go... You want to come down the pub, or oh my god, I'm pregnant the whole time because they sit watching soaps and that's it, and we all talk Australian now.
But the old thing about it is the explanation for this is that they feel unconfident. It's lack of confidence that makes them talk in Australian. As if anyone ever equates Australians as being unconfident. You know, Jermaine Greer, Clive James, Dame Edna Everett. Where are all these unconfident
Skippy
Australians?
Skippy the bush kangaroo, he was very anxious.
He was a diffident kangaroo.
Well, you can do
Australian, but all you have to do is talk in a sort of Cockney tone and then keep your mouth shut to keep flies out and it turns into Australian. I don't know how you can do it, but you go, I got the album further than nigger and it comes out Australian. Oh, I'm pregnant! And that's the theory of Australian accents, apparently.
I don't think it works like that, Clive, frankly. This is the news that the young of Britain today have developed an odd way of speaking due to watching too many Australian soaps. It seems they put the emphasis on the wrong syllable. Apparently people in Australia go up at the end of a sentence. It seems logical it was going down at the beginning of one that got most of them there in the first place. Cutting from the Scottish big issue sent in by John Barker of Lanarkshire.
In Sydney, 120 men named Henry attacked each other during a My Name is Henry convention. Henry Panty of Canberra accused Henry Papp of Sydney of not being a Henry at all, but in fact an Angus. It was a lie, exclaimed Mr. Papp. I'm a Henry and always will be. Whereupon Henry Papp attacked Henry Panty, whilst two other Henrys, Jones and Dyer, attempted to pull them apart. Several more Henrys, Smith, Calderwood, Andrews, became involved. And soon the entire convention descended into a giant fistfight. The brawl was eventually broken up by riot police led by a man named Shane.
Well, we've had a lot of cuttings this week that Charlotte's read from various village newsletters up and down the country, but none, I think, quite so heartrending as this from Bellingham Parish Pump. It says, following the discovery that the bar billiards machine, the piano, and the two table tennis tables bequeathed by the late Mrs. Ellen Amory are all beyond repair, the parish council has regretfully decided not to implement the motion passed at last month's meeting, change the name of Bellingham Village Hall to Bellingham Leisure Centre.
Clive.
Well, this is from the Cotswold edition of the Gloucestershire Echo, sent in from Paul Webber. The story is, a Japanese holidaymaker was sent to a rabbit breeding farm after asking Tourist Information Centre staff the way to the nearest toilet. Confused staff at the Cirencester Centre couldn't understand the man when he asked where the nearest rabbitory was. So, instead of giving him directions to the lavatory, he was given a booklet on Chalderton Rare Breeds Farm Park near Salisbury, nearly 50 miles away.
Sandy.
Well, this is from sent in by Diana Fisher from the Huddersfield Daily Examiner. And it's a story about a man whose life was saved by a smoke detector. It was a sheer miracle, considering he'd taken the battery out and taped it to the ceiling. He decided that he was going to have some chips one night, but he fell asleep in a chair directly under the detector. The pan eventually erupted in flames, but the smoke and crackling fat failed to rouse him. Gradually the heat rose, hit the ceiling, and the tape began to peel. The alarm then fell on the man's head, waking him up.
Right.
This is from the Daily Telegraph, a piece headed, Brussels pays £200,000 to save prostitutes. It says the money will not be going directly into the prostitutes' pockets, but to groups which encourage them to lead a better life. We will be training them for new positions in hotels.
Alan.
Well, here, Barry, is your brass-inlaid mahogany farewell cutting. From the European. And it says, the manufacturers of France's biggest-selling processed cheese, La Vache qui Rit, are considering changing the famous label, which shows a laughing cow. Spokesman Monsieur Raoul Fournier said, when the founders created the product 50 years ago, they wanted shoppers to think our cow was laughing because it was happy. You're ahead of me. But today there is a risk they will think it is laughing because it is mad.
If you were wondering why my voice sounds slightly different in some of those clips, the reason is that in 1996, after 15 years chairing the news quiz, Barry Took decided to retire. He went with the thanks of all news quiz listeners for hundreds of marvellous editions filled with skill, wit, and the great warmth he brought to the show every week. Most of all, Barry was marvellous at encouraging newcomers, bringing out the best in them. Many of us will always be grateful for that. But we have newcomers too, and one of our brightest new stars has proved to be Jeremy Hardy, here tackling that old news quiz standby, the animal story.
Jeremy, whose bite is better than his puppy love?
This would be a dog with a funny name. I can't remember the name, but it's one of those things like Lord Dog. Duke.
Duke.
And it's been,
Duke.
Yeah, Andrew's passed me a note and some cash in an envelope. Duke, he's called. He's called Duke because he looks a bit like John Wayne. And he went to the vet to have his teeth taken out. And the vet thought, why not castrate him while he's here? Which is great, I reckon. I think that's because I'm not a dog lover. And they hacked him off, and his owner's angry because she's going to have to spend lots on lollipops now that the dog's got nothing to lick on those long winter nights. But, and he's... he's been kicked out of dog competitions now because you have to be a complete dog. Not, and who hasn't been a man to take part. But presumably if she got them in a jar and brought him along... And when they say, I'm afraid your dog hasn't won, you say, you're kidding, this is a dog's bollocks, this is.
The question is, what series may soon be appearing in a serial?
Rolf Harris.
That's right. Okay.
This will be that thing where he goes around and sees sick animals.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Not such a good program to be doing this week, of course, but...
Look what I brought into the studio, though.
And is Daisy any better? No.
This is what? One I set fire to earlier. Yeah.
Give him a bonus for that. They're not going to win. Give him a bonus.
Well, this is pure guesswork because I haven't seen the story, but I suspect that there's going to be a little plastic Rolf Harris in every packet of sugar puffs.
Yeah.
It comes flooding back to me now. I remember reading that.
No,
well,
so
it's nearly right. It's plastic animals, isn't it?
Right.
An extraordinary idea of putting plastic animals. There's something about them. If you rub them or something, they
are they ill? They put them into the kids' cereal bowl.
Yeah.
Out of the packet, and they're ill. Right. This is wonderful for cheering up your children. And then John Gummer will come out and stick the plastic thing in his child's mouth. You then, what you're supposed to do if you're a smart child is take this ill animal out of your cereal, unless you swallowed it, in which case you're a sick child, not a sick child, and you rub it with your finger, and the bruise goes away.
Oh, it bruised, yes.
It bruised.
I didn't know...
Can you imagine? I mean, what do we really think about marketing people? They're sitting around in Kellogg's, and they say, here's an idea. Why don't we put a sick plastic animal into our cereal and let a child rub it till it's well?
How do you bruise plastic? Answers on a postcard.
Probably by putting it in Kellogg's, which is frightening.
Also, breakfast is going to go on forever. You want your kids to shovel the cereal down them and get to school. You don't want them sitting there saying, hang on, my goat's not better.
This is the BBC, who, inspired by the success of Rolf Harris's Animal Hospital, have launched a range of sickly animals soon to be found in toy shops and breakfast cereals. The idea is the animals can be nursed by small children, bunny rabbits can be cuddled back to health, puppy dogs stroke better, and moo cows can be piled up and burnt in the garden. And here's a story from the Gloucester Citizen, sent in by Ron Osman of Newnham-on-Severn.
A sex line caller complained to Trading Standards after dialing an 0891 number from an advertisement entitled Hear Me Moan. The caller was played a tape of a woman nagging her husband for failing to do job for him. Consumer watchdogs in Dorset refused to look into the complaint, saying he got what he deserved.
Len, here's a piece of music for you.
Till we meet once again, you and I. Wish me luck as you wave me goodbye.
Lynn, who wished they could have waved her goodbye?
Well, apparently, someone's written this book that says that Vera Lynn was a force, sort of evil, really, in the Second World War, that she filled all our boys with squishy-squashy sort of feelings when they should have been out there, you know, killing the Hun. And it was a terribly bad idea.
How bizarre. But what sort of music do they think our boys should have had? Meatloaf?
Lily Marlene. Right. It's a strange thing that Lily Marlene was the most successful song. They heard Lily Marlene and went out and wanted to kill Germans. They were inspired to do it. It's a wonderful thought, isn't it?
Mind you, it is a dreadful song.
No, it's wonderful.
And it's a German song.
I'll sing it if you like.
Go on, then.
Go on.
In German.
Vor der Laterne durch den stillen Mund steht sich wie in Träume dein geliebter Mund. Dort wird die Welt das Ende sehen, wer wird bei der Laterne stehen als du, Lily Marlene, als du.
So, served you right.
All together now.
God, I feel like taking to Brook again now.
That was absolute filth.
Well, it inspired the truth.
How can somebody be allowed to sing that on Radio 4?
He was making it up. It's just loads of German road signs strung together.
Jeremy, who admitted he admitted what young men?
It's his old mother Runcie, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Robert Runcie has admitted that he knowingly, not in the biblical sense, but knowingly, knowingly ordained gays, and fair play to him, why not? But this has caused a huge backlash among traditionalists, which are what we used to call bigots in the church. And it's rather an alarming prospect, the idea of fundamentalist Anglicans. Sounds like a contradiction in terms, that is, of Shiite jumble sales or suicide car boot sales. But there's a man, George Austin, who's the Archdeacon of York or something, who's been quoting Leviticus, and you're always on shaky ground unless you're an Orthodox Jew quoting Leviticus, because he quotes chapter 22, verse 13 of Leviticus, which says it's an abomination to be gay. Unfortunately, chapter 11, verse 12 says it's an abomination to eat shellfish. Not only that, but chapter 22, verse 15 says that if a man should lie with a beast, then not only he, but the beast must be put to death. So presumably it must have led him on in some way by saying Eeyore when it meant yes.
But it was all about Runcie sort of not ever asking the question.
Mm. Don't ask the question.
And you've got to know how to do that. I don't like dropping names, but a year or so ago, at the height of the Richard Gere hamster crisis, I met Michael Caine at a party, and Caine lives about three houses from Richard Gere and then Cindy Crawford in Bel Air. And I'm not an intrusive man, and I'm nothing else to talk to him about. I said, Michael, is Richard Gere gay? And he said, put it this way, he'd help out if they were short-handed. And I thought... that's the way you've got to ask questions if you're the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Alan Corran, the sheet anchor of the news quiz, rounding off this selection of clips with a story about yet another animal lover. And that's about it for part one of The Pick of 1996, except for the bits that tell us much more by saying much less. The cuttings.
I can't really do a Knaresborough accent, but this is from the Knaresborough Gazette. And says, our staff photographer, Tom Sanders, has confessed to doubts about the success of the talk he gave to Bishop Dunn's school last Thursday on the subject, does the camera ever lie? He projected a photograph apparently taken at the centre court showing Adolf Hitler playing tennis with Winston Churchill and asked the audience what was wrong with it. There was a long silence until one boy finally said, it's not in colour.
Francis, have you brought us a cutting?
I have indeed.
God bless you.
Newbury Weekly News, scene of the anti-bypass protest, and it's about one of these protesters who was up in court. Mr. Rod Earth, who changed his full name by deed poll into a 69-word anti-roads message, was up in court last week, and he was asked to give his name, and he couldn't read it out because he said he hadn't got his contact lenses, so the clerk of the court had to read it out for him. Mrs. Butler, the clerk of the court, said, are you... red hats, green hats, white hats and police hats guard the trolls' work of the chainsaw gangs doing their little bit to build a wasteland where once was beauty, making dirty money, dirty profits. The fat controllers sit behind their piles of money, weaving their power plays. So, in this dinosaur they like to call democracy, love and power to the tribe of Echo Warriors and Mother Earth. Yes, that is my name, said Mr. Earth.
Lynn.
Right, this is from The Times. The life of a journalist is never easy. but one veteran on the Daily Mirror is really going through the mill. After a tipple or two with his chums after work, he tends to fall asleep on the train home to Harpenden in Hertfordshire and wake up at the end of the line in Bedford. One night, when he missed his stop, he reboarded the train in Bedford, fell asleep again, and woke up back in London. Drastic measures were called for, so he boarded the train one night in London and placed a sign around his neck saying, "Please wake me up at Harpenden." Sadly, he woke up in Bedford again to find that someone had written "Tee-hee" on his sign.
Tony.
Yeah, this was sent in by Mr. Tomlinson from Bridge North. It's from the Bridge North Journal, and it's an advert in the classified advertisement. So it goes, Elco circular saw bench. Cost nearly £500, used once, sell for £195 due to bereavement.
Alan.
From the Manchester Evening News.
Oh.
Police called to arrest a naked man on the platform at Piccadilly Station released their suspect after he produced a valid rail ticket.
And before I say goodbye, I want to thank everyone who sends in their favourite cuttings. Not only do they make us laugh, but they pad out the show at no cost whatever to the BBC. So if you see something that amuses you or your friends, please send it in. That's it for part one. I'll be back next week at the same time with another batch of the funniest moments from the second part of the News Quiz year. In the meantime, we all wish you a happy and a peaceful Christmas. Part one of the News Quiz of 1996 was presented by Simon Hoggart and featured Barry Took, Alan Corran, Francis Ween, Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy, Clive Anderson, Tony Banks, Roy Hattersley, Tony Hawkes, Charles Kennedy, Fred McCauley, Steve Punt, Mark Steele, Laurie Taylor, Sandy Toksvig, and Lynn Truss. The newsreaders were Peter Donaldson, Charlotte Green, and me, Brian Perkins. It was researched and written by Ian Pattinson, with additional material by Hugh Rycroft and Adam Bostock-Smith, and the producer was Alan Evans.